This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Emily Esterson from Coverside Magazine, the magazine of mounted fox hunting.
And I'm Tara Tibbetts, coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. And you're listening to the monthly fox hunting episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 20th, 2020, episode 2375. This episode is brought to you by Coverside Magazine. Good morning, horse world. This is our special episode of Fox Hunting. We come to you the third Thursday of every month. So if it's on your bucket list to go on a fox hunt or learn more about it, mark your calendar and join us the third Thursday of every month. And now, Jen is going to tell us what's on today's show.
Coming up. That's right. Coming up on today's show, we're going to be speaking with Meg Volnowski, the huntsman for Monmouth County Hunt, one of them that's been around for a very long time. They did something really unique to help encourage newbies to come into the hunt field, especially newbies who like standardbreds, hint, hint, hint. And also, Ed Fry is going to stop by, and he is the master of foxhounds for Wicomico Hunt. So that's what's coming up. And what's been going on with Tara and Emily since we spoke last? You guys are always off out on big adventures.
Well, Emily's had the biggest adventure, and not fox hunting adventure, but an adventure nonetheless.
Are you talking about baking school?
Yes.
You went to baking school?
I went to baking school for a week. It was so much fun.
No way. Are we going to see you on Food Channel next month?
Oh, you know what? I every now and again, I apply.
I feel like this directly correlates to, I mean, you've got to have like amazing baked goods for your hunt breakfast.
That's true.
Well, honestly, you are absolutely right about that, Tara, because our hunt breakfast is like a competitive sport. We do not compete when it comes to, you know, to fox hunting, because we're all out there to have a good time. And a lot of us are former competitors, but hunt breakfast is really amazing. And everybody brings something delicious. And the whole baking thing for me really started, it started in college, you know, and my Instagram account, somebody posted, my college roommate posted, and she's like, "You're still at it." So I started baking in college, but I really got into it in the past 10 years or so. And part of that has to do with making something every Saturday for hunt breakfast. And so, yes, it is directly correlated. And I had a great time. I went to San Francisco and I made 125 baguettes.
Holy
smokes.
Yeah, that's my big adventure. Yep, it was incredible. So,
and my thumb, have to keep making them until you get it perfect?
Well, we had, we did, the school was 5 days and it was 6:30 to 3:30 and we had exams every day and we had, we did three different doughs, five each. And so five baguettes each. And we had an exam at the end of each day where they looked at, you know, the teacher would look at all your baguettes and tell you what you did wrong, what you did right. And we did different shapes and different mixes. And so, yeah, we did a lot. And, you know, when I got back home, I had to like recreate the whole thing in my kitchen. So, you know, it's my new thing now. I'm baking all the time.
Like, if anybody who is on a gluten-free diet, do not follow Emily on Facebook. Or Instagram.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. Horses and bread and puppies. That's pretty much all you get on my Instagram account.
That's really funny. So quickly, for fox hunting newbies or outsiders who don't follow fox hunting much, fox chasing, give me a brief overview of what hunt breakfast is, because some folks might not be familiar.
Well, not all hunts have hunt breakfast, but most do. And even though hunt breakfast often takes place not at breakfast or more often at lunch or sometimes even in the afternoon,
But it's still called breakfast.
It's still called breakfast. And hunt breakfast happens. And a lot of people, hunts do it in different ways. But most of the time, if it's nice, it might be a tailgate. You know, we're lucky in New Mexico because we have, by the middle of the day, it's usually 50 degrees or so. And we can eat outside and we bundle up if we need to. Some repair to a local inn or pub. Some, you know, do it at somebody's house, some member's house or a landowner's house. It just depends. And oftentimes it's a potluck and people bring dishes to share. Some hunts do it where a group of people is designated to host each week. And so they sign up with a, you know, group of friends and they host the hunt breakfast and it rotates around. That way, not everybody is responsible for bringing something every week. So it just really depends, but yeah, it's a tradition in the fox hunting world to eat afterwards. And believe me, by the time you get in from a hot, you know, or a cold, but very exciting 3-hour hunt, you could eat your own arm. So, it's, you know, it's pretty, everybody looks forward and, you know, it's been a good day when you're hacking in and everybody starts talking about food. So,
so it's a nosh after you go out for your fox hunt.
Yeah, it's a nosh. Sometimes it's a snack and sometimes it's a much bigger deal, like a really big catered meal. And Coverside Magazine, we haven't run it in a while because our writer has not been traveling, but we have a writer named Michael Stern who has was a writer for the old Gourmet Magazine, which folded a bunch of years ago. And Michael
runs Gourmet Magazine.
Yeah, Michael Stern and Michael and Jane Stern used to write a column called Road Food for Gourmet. And he's a fox hunter. He lives in Aiken now. And he occasionally will write our food column for us. And we're honored to have him as a writer. But anyway, so we have been running a column for many years called Fare and Flask. And it's all about hunt breakfast recipes. So we've kind of taken a hiatus on it, but we're hoping to rejuvenate it in 2020. So. That is hunt breakfast.
And a lot of hunts have cookbooks.
Yes.
Kind of based on their breakfasts. Yeah. As I know, it was kind of adorable. One of the owners of my company gave me the Radnor Hunts cookbook for Christmas this past year.
Yep.
Bet you that's a good
I have a copy of that also.
Yeah. It's so pretty.
I have an idea. You know how we have hound shows and we have hunter paces, all sorts of things.
I like where this is going.
All sorts of cool things that members of the hunt and friends of the hunt do during the season as well as the off season. There needs to be fun-loving fundraising contests amongst those who love to cook and bake for hunts. Because I know a certain horse husband who could enjoy that.
Right?
Have a little, you know, have little contests and little, like a chili cook-off sponsored by the hunt. Talk about a way to bring people outside the sport in. Ah!
Everybody likes to eat. It's true.
Yeah, I'm liking this.
So a couple of years ago, we started a little tradition. And I think this, you know, I'm going to take credit for this idea, but other members of my hunt might be saying, no, it was my idea. But I will take sort of credit.
But you have the microphone.
That's right.
Yeah, I have the microphone. Anyway, so we decided at the end, instead, you know how in closing hunt, you give out people give out their colors and they give out their, you know, unscheduled dismount awards and, you know, all the fun little things that you do at the end of closing season. We give out cooking awards. So best main dish, best dessert, most memorable. So that's a lot of fun.
Oh, cool.
All right,
there you go.
That.
Great ideas for hunt clubs and other equestrian clubs all over the nation. And yeah, I'm liking it.
So Tara, have you been hunting?
Yes, I have been hunting. I've been hunting with Brazos Valley, which has been going great. It's no crazy stories to tell, which is good or bad. Good if you're me, bad if you're looking for some fun stories. I had been planning to go to Leavenworth for their hunt ball, but between work travel and weather was kind of sketchy, I just didn't make that happen. So was bummed to miss that, but we did have our Brazos Valley hunt ball a couple weeks ago, which was lovely. We had it in a new venue, which was really fun and fancy. And it's always interesting to see your hunting friends in dresses and not covered in mud. And you know, with no makeup and whatnot. So we had a delightful evening and yeah, just kind of plugging along with the hunting. And we in the pre-show stuff, we're talking at length about my old whip horse, which we will talk more about whipping in later in the show and as our term of the month. But Jaguar was my old whip horse and he had an unfortunate incident on Saturday. To we think he stepped on the U-channel guide to his stall door into his paddock. We're not completely sure, but he ripped his hoof from the bottom up to his cornet band, which was pretty, there was a lot of blood.
It's and icky. I saw the pictures. Icky.
It's pretty icky and he's terrifically stoic. So I guess that helps. If you're me finding this, that he's just standing looking at me while he's eating his friend's hay that he's not supposed to eat. Like, what, Mom? So we were able to get it cleaned up. And, you know, this is the joy of technology in 2020. I can take pictures and videos and send them to the veterinarian and they can give me my directions for the evening so they don't have to charge me an obscenely expensive farm call on a Saturday night. So I got him cleaned up and got his foot all wrapped up with a diaper. Highly recommend anyone with horses keep diapers around because they're fabulous for this type of situation. So I soaked his foot with the help of seven of my dogs and got it all wrapped up and went to the vet on Sunday morning and got, they wired his hoof back together. And then I got some directions from the veterinarian to have my farrier come and he came today and we put a bar shoe on his foot. So he should have that for probably 12 weeks is what the vet was thinking in hopes that his hoof will grow down and not splay where the split is. So yeah. it's been an exciting 48 hours, but he hasn't really been sore on his foot and he's 27 years old and retired. So if somebody made me pick which horse was going to have some ridiculously catastrophic injury right now, I guess I would pick him. So that's been my excitement.
Oof. Well, I'm glad it sounds like it's going to be okay. You know, that's a brutal, it's a brutal injury. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, it
makes my hair stand up to think about it.
Yes. It's looking at that. When I first found it, when I realized what it was, just, you know, your heart jumps up into your throat as with horse ownership. But he's 27. This is really the first time I can ever remember him hurting himself. And he seemed a little bit tender after drilling on it yesterday with the wire thing. And I'll give him that. So he'll be on bute for a few days and antibiotics for 4 or 5. And we'll see what it looks like in a month. And hopefully he's back to his chipper old self.
No, I'm glad he's going to recover. That's all good news.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wowzers. So I think now that we've mentioned all sorts of different hunting terms that folks might not be familiar with, because that happens quite by accident around here, seeing as how for Tara and Emily, it's like a second language for them. We always do a term of the month every month. So that will help folks like me understand what the heck they're talking about. What is our term of the month?
So the term of the month this February is Whipper In. This is a staff member who assists the huntsman in control of the hounds. And I'll put in the show notes, I got this from the Keswick Hunt Club website. And since Emily and I both work, I don't know if that's the appropriate word, but we both participate as whipper-ins at our hunts, I thought this would be a fun chit-chat because I know for me with the hunts that I've been to, really the whipper-in role varies a lot by hunt and by huntsman. And so I'll tell my example. So I started whipping in with Brazos Valley Hounds. It's probably been 5 seasons ago, maybe 6. And our hunts, we don't have big long runs because of the nature of our property. And so really what our whips do is we position whips in key areas around the properties where we're hunting to assure that the hounds stay on property. We have a couple properties where we know if the hounds go off, they're in a busy road or they go on property where they're not welcome. There's one property where there's a shooting range nearby that's kind of dangerous, obviously, for the hounds to go to. So it's really important for us as whips to keep, you know, if we see the hounds, we turn them to stay on the property. And it's a little precarious if they're really on a hot scent. But again, if, you know, one of the one where the shooting range is, there's a spot there where they sometimes get on a hot run. And it's hard, but man, you got to turn them away so that they don't go into harm's way. So Emily, what's your experience like?
Well, I have been a relief whip, which, you know, is when somebody else is not there. They call me in to whip in. And we have sort of the opposite environment. We have a lot of very open acreage. We hunt on public land with very little boundary or borders. We don't have roads. We do have a little bit of a kind of casual shooting range in one of our territories. So we have to kind of be aware of that, but we don't generally hunt near it. And so the job of a whipper in that kind of environment has more to do with being a lookout for quarry. And often the whippers in are, there's two, a right flank and a left flank, and then there's a drag whip. And the right flank and the left flank are really sort of pretty far out there. They might be, you know, a football field's length, you know, 100 yards or more away from the huntsman on either side. They form kind of a rectangle with the points, you know, with the points of the rectangle as being the huntsman and the hounds, and then the drag whip. And the whippers in basically keep their eyes open for various things, but often for coyote. And I've often viewed way out there on the side and called in, you know, called tally ho. And then the huntsman would turn the hounds and put them, you know, hopefully they got catch the scent at that point. And the other thing that we have quite a bit of cattle because we're on public land. And so there's, you know, free ranging cattle out there. And so so sometimes we need to, you know, turn the hounds away from the cattle, let the huntsman know that there's cattle out there. So I've occasionally actually had to herd cattle because the cattle are fed by cowboys on horseback or and so sometimes they see us coming and they like herd up and they're like, hello, it's dinner time. So I've had to like ride the cattle off the hounds and the field, you know, had to do that a few times. So, and then of course, you know, keeping the hounds, from, you know, if somebody's ranging or rioting for whatever reason, you know, calling them back in, and that's really the job. So it really depends. And, you know, also the other thing in other hunts I've been to where I've, been a guest, they have road whips who are in cars.
Yeah.
And those people actually have radios and sometimes they have satellite, connections to hounds with GPS collars. And they are the ones who kind of keep, they'll stop traffic if necessary. They'll, you know, they'll turn the hounds on the road if they need to. And so that road whips in this day and age, the 21st century, are super important members of a lot of hunts because, you know, some hunts are hunting in populated areas where there's traffic and roads and cars and stuff. And so I went out road whipping, with Golden's Bridge a few years ago. And they have they're in a very suburban area. They're kind of like, you know, 50 miles from New York City. And so they have this, you know, pretty elaborate whipping in system with the road whips stationed at different places. And they have, you know, antenna collars on the dogs, on the hounds. And they, you know, the road whips have the tracking devices and they can see where the hounds are going and who's where. And each hound has a number and they know who they are. It's really pretty interesting to see how that all works out.
Well, I think so, too, for the road whipping, I rode with road whips in with Tryon and with Green Creek in the Carolinas. And it's a great way for folks who maybe used to be whippers in on horseback to stay involved with the hunt. And they have invaluable knowledge, but they, for some whatever reason, can't ride or, you know, various and sundry reasons there. And there's one gentleman I think that rides out with them. I don't know that he's necessarily a road whip, but he's a photographer and takes amazing photos. So I agree. I think road whipping is, and when you're a guest, you can ride along with the road whip and learn a tremendous amount and you can talk as much as you want and nobody will get mad at you.
That's true. You're not supposed to talk when you're hunting. And the other thing about road whips too, is that they're often getting the view of the quarry before anyone else. And so the quarry might run across their path, and, you know, and they can sort of radio in and say, hey, we saw, you know, the coyote just cross Route 12, you know? So, I mean, they definitely have it. I think we should, at some point, it would be really fun to do a show on photographing hunts, because you're right. The photographers that I know that ride with road whips get the best pictures because they're in front of the action and not behind it.
Absolutely.
That's one really cool thing about riding with road whip, is that you actually get to see the action come towards you a lot of times, which is really fun.
So. Well, I do think it's also worth the conversation. So, you know, if our listeners, if anyone, you know, has been hunting for a while or is looking for a hunt horse, you'll often see advertisements for horses that have hunted, and it'll say, you know, first flight, second flight, whips horse. And I think it's important to understand that there are horses out there that are phenomenal in the field and they're terrible whip horses, and that there's a lot of horses that are phenomenal whip horses and they're terrible in the field. And there are many horses that can do both, but it's a unique horse that will, because a whip you ride, often you ride away from the group. And so you have to be on a horse that's comfortable with leaving his friends.
Yep. I'll tell you a story about that. Miss Lucy, not to brag on Miss Lucy, but I'm going to, because she's awesome. The reason I decided to buy her was because I was out leading a hound exercise on a late spring morning. And she, her owner at the time had come out with her, and she was just barely four, like maybe even three and a half. And, you know, it was a quiet day. It was pretty hot. We didn't do a lot. We, you know, exercised the hound up the road, but this mare was so lovely and quiet. And I said to the woman, who's a friend of mine and she's a really good rider, I'm like, would you mind riding your horse like over there far away up to the top of that hill? And she was like, no. So she rode her over there, you know, and this horse is three and a half. And she was fine. She was great. And she rode her back. And I was like, I think I might have to buy that horse. She'd make a great whip horse. And I did. And she's one of few that can actually do both jobs. But I will tell you that if I've just been whipping in with her for, you know, a few months or whatever, and then I bring her back into the field, she gets very anxious when she sees the hounds. And she, so I have to kind of ride her differently in the field than a normal field member would. I have to ride her a little bit off to the side and a little bit in the back, because if I ride her in first flight and she sees the hounds, she's going to want to, you know, rush up to her job and do her job. She's like, yeah, I have a job to do. So she really knows that job now. And so riding, even though she's adjustable and I can ride her in the field, and I've actually had less experienced riders ride her because she's so good and quiet, I still have to ride her a little bit differently now that she's whipped in quite a bit. So,
yeah, Simon is much the same. I've actually never ridden him in the field with Brazos Valley. He's only whipped in, but we rode in the field with at Burwell and then also in Montana previously. And he's six now, so he's still fairly young, and he's taken it like a champ. The only concern he's had at all is, there's one particular property that we whip in here with Brazos Valley where we kind of stay near this. There's a big open spot in the fence line that is just impossible to like put fencing up to cover it. So you kind of have to watch it on horseback. And anytime the field comes by, he's always like, wait, what, why are my friends leaving me? And he gets upset for about 3 minutes and then he's fine. So,
yeah,
but yeah, so that is our term of the month, whipper in. So, Emily, what is coming up in the next cover side issue?
Well, we just put it to bed this week, and we have subscribers. We'll be getting it in their mailbox at the end of February. And we have a great conservation story where we talk to Ed Fry of Wicomico. He's coming up as a guest in the on our show here in a few minutes. And they won the Hunting Habitat Conservation Award. And so we have a big profile of Wicomico and how they did that, how they conserved a bunch of land and how they restored it. So that's a very cool story. We have a story about a Friesian And she was a guest on the show a couple of shows ago. Maybe it was the last show. I think she was a guest. And coming up in the summer issue, we always do our special art and literature issue. So we'll feature a couple of artists. And we're also going to, hopefully, to all you listeners out there, we're going to have a short story contest. It has to be fox hunting themed. And so we put the word out a few times now. We're going to put it out again the next week or two. And we're hoping that people will put their creative pens to paper and write some short stories about fox hunting, because we love those and people love them. And of course, the famous Rita Mae Brown fox hunting series is mystery series is the inspiration for that. So that's what's coming up in the summer issue. And I think that's it for now. We're still working on some stuff. And of course, we always have our monthly e-newsletter that has all kinds of little goodies in it. So that's what's happening.
Cool. Where can folks get their magazine? Where can they read it? How can they subscribe, et cetera?
How can they subscribe? They can go to MFHA.com and they can subscribe online there. Or they can call over there or email office@MFHA.com. And it's a great deal. And they get the e-newsletter and they get the print edition and they get the annual hunt roster, which is the who's who of hunting in the United States. And they can find that at MFHA.com. And if they want to read the magazine online, they can find it at issuu.com/ecovertside. And that's the digital edition. But if they want to get a beautiful print copy in their mailbox to hold in their hand and read, they should subscribe.
Dun, dun, dun. You can do all that and more. Just check it out. All right. Pretty cool. And now I think it's time to welcome Meg to the show.
So hi, Meg. And thank you for joining us today on the Fox Hunting Podcast. You are with the Mammoth County Hunt, correct?
Correct.
We wanted to chat with you a little bit about a really cool event that you just had, which was inviting standard bred owners out to hunt with you. So we're always on this podcast, we're always about welcoming as many people as we can into the tent of fox hunting and demystifying the fact that it's only for people who have thoroughbreds or warm bloods or, you know, and making sure that people know that fox hunting is pretty much for everybody who wants to try it. So I thought it would be great to talk to you about this hunt that you guys recently hosted. So why don't you go ahead and give us sort of a rundown about how that went down? How did you plan it? How did you organize it? And how did you reach out to people?
Yeah, a little bit of background. So the sort of birth of the idea it comes exactly from what you said is that, you know, we also want to reach out to people and demystify fox hunting. And so we've done the thoroughbred hunt days and just generally encouraging people to come out and try fox hunting. But one of our members who is a standardbred owner, Sam Landy, kind of approached us and said, "Hey, did you ever think of really focusing on the standardbreds?" And we were like, "Wow, what an obvious idea for us," because we're here in the middle of New Jersey and we are surrounded by standardbred breeding farms. We have racetracks in the north and south of the state, and we have lots of trainers and owners around, and we have a number of members that hunt standardbreds. So we thought that, let's sort of recognize that they're the standardbred and have a hunt day that really just features them. You know, our kennels are fairly close to, in close proximity to the New Jersey Horse Park. So there's a fairly popular standardbred horse show at that's very well attended. So we just started to advertise, we used social media, and we had a great response. So we had standardbreds from 3 states and 12 in the hunt field that day. And unlike possibly if we had 12 green thoroughbreds, we had no major mishaps because they're very sensible horses, and everybody had a great day. So everybody was safe, had a good time. The ones that could jump some fences. And, you know, there's a variation, obviously, of the different horses that were out, and their backgrounds. There were some pacers, there were some trotters, and mm-hmm. we had we had everything.
Mm-hmm. And what about the ages of the participants? Were they kind of all over the board, or, you know, was there a particular group that came, or was it just sort of a general population?
It was a general population, wide variety. As I said, one of our members who is a standardbred owner, Sam Landy, he was there with his retired standardbred that I think they raced. And then we also had Karen Malinowski's horse out with another local trainer and driver, Wendy Hale, who that horse has been raced and also was out. She hunted fairly regularly with us. And they also hunter pace. So sometimes the standardbreds will come and try the hunter pacing first. And then this time they came and did the actual hunting day.
And so did you modify the hunt at all to accommodate the newcomers?
No, we did not. We have two fields. So they had a choice whether they wanted to be in first flight or whether they wanted to be in hilltoppers. I think we had a fairly even mix of people that split between the two. Our hunt country is, we have the luxury of having go rounds around the jumps. So there's not a lot of pressure there for people to have to jump light panels and things that you might have to do in other hunt countries. So that worked out well, and it's open fields and woods. And so they could pick which field they wanted to be in.
So, producer Jen here, I've got a question because I'm a giant standardbred fan and I'm a giant fox hunting fan. So this conversation's just piqued my interest. Who specifically, and kind of take us through the process of reaching out to the standardbred community to welcome these new people in? What are some of the things you did to try to open your arms and say, come on, folks, all you guys with the jugheads, come on over and visit?
Okay. So we reached out, well, obviously in our town here in Allentown, New Jersey, the Standardbred Retirement Foundation is based here. So we reached out to the Standardbred Retirement Foundation. We reached out, as I said, our members are very well connected within the standardbred community. So they reached out to their connections in the standardbred community. Again, social media, the post got passed around. I personally was in communication with some of the people from the Standardbred Retirement Foundation, who had questions just about our sport and how the day would play out for a hunting day. And it really just took on a life of its own, as you know, it can when you utilize social media. So, and again, it was the enthusiasm of some of our members that do have standardbreds and are already hunting them that helped us to really connect with a lot of people. And we hope to continue that because, again, in this area, there are a lot of people that have standardbreds. There's a lot of need for adoption. And again, because we saw the enthusiasm with the standardbred horse show at the horse park, it gets very well attended. It has multidisciplinary. So the standardbred owners seem open to trying new things and having new things they can do with their horses.
So I'm curious as to what you did after the hunt to follow up. Did you, first of all, do you have a hunt breakfast or a meal?
Yes,
after?
We did have mm-hmm. We had a hunt breakfast, and we actually were, you know, extremely lucky. I mean, it got very good coverage, but we met with obviously and interacted with all the riders after. And they've all been invited back, and we hope that they come and join us again. And we actually have one or two people that have already signed up to come out capping again. So that's a win-win situation for everybody.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about your hunt in general. We always like to sort of spotlight on the hunts themselves and talk about like what kind of hunting, what kind of territory, how many members, how long you've been around. We'd love to have some background on Monmouth County.
Sure. So Monmouth County Hunt is one of the oldest hunts in the United States. We were founded in 1885 by Peter Collier, who was the publisher of Collier's Magazine. And then back in the 30s and 40s, it was taken over by Amory Haskell, who many people will know that name from the Haskell Stakes race that goes on every summer and is the biggest race at the Monmouth County Park race meet. And so we've been in the county for like close to 130 years now. But about 35, 40 years ago, we moved from obviously the eastern part of the county to the western part of the county, where it's a little bit more rural. And we've been lucky enough to have farm country as well as some wildlife areas that we're able to hunt. Our kennels are based in Allentown, New Jersey, really in very close proximity to the New Jersey Horse Park. We're able to, you know, we're very lucky, even though we're in a very populated state, to be able to still walk our hounds out from the kennels. We hunt 2 days a week from August through March. We hunt mainly fox. Although we know coyotes are in the area, we're still mainly hunting fox. And we have, our fields can range from maybe 10 people during the week on a weekday to 20 to 30 people on the weekends, so certainly depending on what's going on, what kind of a day it is, and the weather. You definitely get fewer people when the temperature goes down, but we still have a good turnout.
So how many couple do you have?
We have 25 couple of crossbred hound in the kennel, and we usually hunt about 12 couple on a usual day. And we have professional hunt staff that are there all the time taking care of them. And we breed, you know, we breed mainly crossbreds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. And so what do you plan to do? Do you plan to reach out again to the standard bred population and follow up with the people that came out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we really do track all of the people that come out and hunt with us. And we try, even at our hunter paces, to reach out and get to know people that just come out and hunt our pace and encourage them to try fox hunting. And we've actually been very successful with that. We've gotten people to come out and try, and we've gotten quite a few new members that way. And we also have different levels of membership for our members, because it gives them the opportunity to maybe come out and do the old model of three caps when you join. It's not always, people always can't always make that decision that quickly. So we offer a number of levels of membership so that they can come out maybe for 10 times per year and see if they really get the bug.
Mm-hmm. Great. Excellent. So how can people get in touch with Monmouth County Hunt and with you if they want to come out and give it a try?
Well, they certainly can contact us through the Hunt Secretary and our Joint Master, Jennifer Donaldson, or they can message us on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Just go to our Facebook page and you'll see all of our upcoming events and everything that we're planning, and we'll be hunting through the end of March. And we'd welcome any standardbreds or thoroughbreds or anybody else that wants to come out and join us for the remainder of the season. Capping would be, we'd love to have them.
And so do you do anything in the spring after hunt season? I know you said hunter paces, but are there other events like trail rides and picnics?
Yes, we do six hunter paces a year. So we'll have three in the spring. We do April, May, June. We are going to be hosting the New Jersey Interhunt Puppy Show this year, which will be here in Allentown. That's where all of the New Jersey hunts get together before the big hound shows and sort of get our puppies together. Or if some of the smaller hunts, if you don't breed every year and don't have puppies, we can still get our hounds out and show them. And then we also have a horse show. And our horse show is also in May. We've had our horse show for a number of years, and it's been now integrated into one of the local series. So we stay connected. So I have show horses too. So we like people to be in multidisciplinary and just relate to the whole horse community and not sort of be isolated, so that, you know, people with showing can come out and enjoy it. People with standardbreds can come out and enjoy how much fun it is to be out in the open and hunting. So that happens pretty much through April and May. Then a little bit of quiet time for June and July. Then we start to rode our hounds. We actually start exercising on bicycles first, getting the hounds in shape, then back on horses, and we start cubbing back in August. So we encourage people to come out and join us on those early morning days that are so so much fun.
That just sounds
young horses.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I love the multidisciplinary approach where you're integrated with horse showing and with standard breds and thoroughbreds and hunter paces, and it's great. It sounds like you're really involved in the whole horse community there in New Jersey, which is where I'm from, but northern New Jersey. So not a lot of horses up there.
Well, I originally was from northern New Jersey, but there really is a very strong horse community here with the, especially in Allentown, there really are multiple standard bred breeding farms, some thoroughbreds, lots of hunter jumper barns, really great people around that support each other, support hunting. And it is good for us to be around and integrated in with everybody. So we try to stay involved and not have fox hunting viewed as sort of getting it rebranded from its old view of being sort of an elitist sport, because it's not at all. It's just really people come out and have a great time and a lot of fun out for the day.
Yeah, it's so true. It's just so much fun, and it's great to welcome everybody into it and try to change that viewpoint of it being too traditional or not welcoming. So go ahead.
Well, just to add, we really encourage the kids to get out. We have free memberships for the 4-H and for the Pony Club, and we really want those kids out and starting to get involved in the sport so they can carry it on into the future.
Yeah. So on the 4-H, have you had much luck getting the 4-H kids out?
We have a few 4-H members, and we have Pony Club.
Yeah. The connection with Pony Club is a lot stronger, but I know that a lot of hunt clubs are working on the 4-H angle too, and it hasn't been as easy for them. So, but that's great that you're working on that.
We try to cover every base and in the horse community and get people to come out and enjoy the sport.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Meg. We appreciate it. And we will hopefully send some people to your Facebook page so they can come out if they're in the New Jersey area and experience Monmouth County for themselves and enjoy your hospitality. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Fascinating chat with Meg. Now, we've already got Ed waiting in the wings, so let's bring on our next guest.
So we have with us today Ed Fry, Master of Foxhounds for the Wicomico Hunt. And we have him today because the Wicomico Hunt won the Hunting Habitat Conservation Award from the Masters of Foxhounds Association. And that award has been given every year for quite some time. And it honors the hunt that has done a job. Sometimes it's an individual and sometimes it's a hunt that has worked to preserve land for fox hunting and other opportunities, and just to conserve land, which is an important part, of course, of the, the whole equestrian landscape. And so we have Ed here today to talk to us about the Chino Farms project and how that all came about. And so, Ed, I know you're in Maryland, so why don't you go ahead and give us sort of a little bit of background on Chino Farms and Wicomico and how the two kind of interacted in this conservation project.
I would be glad to do that. The Chino Farm is a large farm outside of Chestertown, Maryland, in Queen Anne's County. And it was originally purchased in segments to make the 4,700 acres today by Henry Sears, who started buying this land in the 1940s during World War II. And he owned the land and lived there up until the 1980s. And his son, Dr. Harry Sears, grew up hunting on the farm, hunting ducks and geese and pheasants and quail and deer, and Dr. Sears, who as a profession was a cancer researcher, medical doctor at Harvard University for his career, he always spent his weekends at the farm. And approximately 20 years ago, I knew Harry and I talked with him about us fox hunting on the property. And he and I rode together over the property and decided that, yes, it was an activity that would fit in with his ethos. And certainly as a fox hunter, we wanted to open up more territory. So today on the 4,700 acres, we actually have three separate fixtures. And we have been hunting there for almost 20 years. And the Washington College, our local liberal arts college in Chestertown, has become involved with Harry, and he's actually gifting the property to the college. And for the last 6 years, we have been sponsoring a Chino chase as a fundraiser for the equestrian club at the college, and have raised tens and tens of thousands of dollars to help support the college equestrian club.
So does Mr. Sears ride with you now?
He does not ride with us. He rode as a young man, but Harry is probably 85, 86, and he does come out and watch the fox hunting. On one fixture, we have a member of our club, Garen Stutzman, who has a carriage, and he will bring his two mules, Pat and Pearl, to pull this carriage, which will carry a dozen people, and Harry often rides with him on the carriage following the fox hunt.
And so does the carriage follows the hunt. Does he often, do you often have ground guests who ride in the carriage?
We do. And when we have the Chino chase, there'll probably be 25 people that are on foot or in cars following the hunt.
And so the Chino chase, is that a hunter pace or what? What is the event?
It is a fox hunt. Mm-hmm. And we raise the money through capping fees and donations, and we invite the equestrian club members to ride, and we have a guest pack of hounds. This year it will be the Green Spring Valley Hounds on March the 8th, and last year it was Green Spring Valley. The year before it was the Harford Elk Ridge Hounds. And we will have 75 or 80 mounted riders and 25 foot followers. A lot of parents of the equestrian club come to watch, and with a tented tailgate afterwards. And it's a very festive event.
Wow. That sounds like a great deal of fun. That sounds like a great fundraiser. And so the cap money and the participation funds go to support the club. Is that how that works?
That is exactly right. And usually it's annually, it's between $8,000 and $10,000, which is very important to the equestrian club for their activities.
Yeah.
So it's a way that we can give back.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about some of the actual conservation efforts. I know that there was some land restoration and there were some organizations involved in that, like, the state and the Conservation Corps and Wildlife Research Center, and talk about how that all happened. Because I think that's really an interesting part of this whole story, that a lot of animals kind of repopulated the area.
Yes. And Harry actually began over 20 years ago with this restoration, and his father had left the 4,700 acres in a trust for Harry's three sons. And when Henry the senior died, in the 1980s, the three grandsons of Henry decided that the highest and best value of that land was to develop it. And it made Harry so upset that he broke up the trust and bought the land from his three sons so that it could be preserved. And they went to the Nature Conservancy and preserved the farm in perpetuity. And it is the largest single property that has been conserved in the state of Maryland.
Wow.
With 2.5 miles of waterfront and over 3,000 acres of agricultural land.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the pictures that we got, and they're, you know, it just looks like a great place to ride and to be outdoors. And, you know, we've got this like wonderful photograph of an osprey on a blind, or I don't know what that's called, on a kind of a platform. And looks like
perch.
Great
perch.
A perch. Duh. Okay. It's a good word, perch. So tell us a little bit about Wicomico and the hunt itself and how many members you have and where you hunt and if people are in the area, how they can get involved.
The Wicomico hunt is located on the Delmarva Peninsula, the eastern shore of Maryland, and two counties in Delaware. And we hunt in the two counties in Delaware and six counties in Maryland. And we have, at this time, approximately 14 fixtures that we hunt. Our kennels are in Centerville, Maryland. Our huntsman is Marty Marani. And it's live hunting and it's red fox hunting. And I like to tell people the word blank, such as blank day, is not in our vocabulary. We always have game. And lots of good sport. Our pack is approximately 30 to 40% Penn Merrydale, and the rest are crossbred. And we're looking at breeding back more Penn Merrydale blood into the pack. Our fixtures, interestingly enough, 11 of our 14 fixtures border water. Mm. There's five different rivers that feed the Chesapeake Bay. We have one fixture right on the bay, and we have another fixture on the Chesapeake and Delaware Canal. So water is almost always a feature that we see when we're hunting. And 9 of those 14 fixtures are in permanent preserved status in agriculture.
Wow.
So the preservation is important in this region. And I happen to serve on the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy Board and have 3 farms myself that are in permanent preservation.
And so how many total acres is that of fixtures?
Of fixtures? Oh,
yeah.
I haven't tried to calculate that, but it's probably 12 to 14,000 acres.
Wow.
Of all these fixtures added together.
Yes. And how much of that, if you had to guess, how much of that would be in conservation easement of some kind?
Probably 10,000 acres of it.
Wow. That's impressive, especially in that area, which is so populated.
Yeah. Well, we on the Eastern Shore, we are trying to preserve open space in agriculture. And in fact, our conservancy has an initiative called the Delmarva Oasis. And the Delmarva is all of Delaware, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and part of Virginia. And that goes all the way down towards the bridge tunnel at Norfolk. And this initiative is to preserve 50% of all the land on this Delmarva Peninsula in open space in agriculture.
Wow.
And right now it's at about 28% to 30%.
Hmm.
And so it's a very aggressive effort, and we're not only trying to preserve open space in the agricultural land, but we're being proactive in trying to preserve the local communities.
Mm-hmm. So do you have, in addition to actual hunting, do you have other club events like trail rides, hunter pieces, things
we do,
in the off-season?
In the off-season, we'll do paper chases and trail rides once a week. And for some of the club members, some of the members like me are people that ride to hunt. So I don't ride during the off-season. I just ride when the hunting season's in. But we do have activities. We participated in the Hark Forward performance trials. And we have had performance trials for 2 years, and we will have our third performance trial on Y Island this coming March 14 and 15. And Y Island is a unique property in Queen Anne County that is actually an island. It was owned by one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and it's about 2,000 acres of huntable land, and so we it's owned by the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we're partnering with them to have our performance trial there.
Oh, great. Yeah, that sounds great. So if people want to get in touch with you and come out and visit the hunt and possibly cap or get involved in some of your off-season activities, can they find you on the web?
We have a website, and we are welcome people to come. We had a guest just this past weekend from Montana that came in to hunt with us.
Ah.
And so we do get guests that travel in. And our website is the Wicomico Hunt Club. And we also have a Facebook page, Wicomico Hunt Club. And on the website, that tells you more about the fixtures, the club, and it refers you to our liability and who to contact to come hunting. And we also have on our, today was our Wednesday hunt, and we have people on foot. And one gentleman rides a bicycle, and all in with the idea of listening to good hound work, good music.
And yeah, great hound music. And so how many days a week do you hunt? 2 days or?
We usually hunt 2 days a week. This week, because of President's Day, we try to hunt the holidays to let students and juniors hunt on that day. And so we hunted 3 days this week, but normally it's Wednesdays and Sundays.
Great.
And I would say one thing that has worked well for our club is we do in the month of September what we call Fox Hunting 101. Mm. And we invite people for a small fee to ride, and we do educational programs for 4 Sundays in a row, and we usually get 15 to 20 people, some juniors come out and learn about fox hunting, and we have gotten members from that. And the second thing that has been wonderful for our club is that our board of directors decided to have a membership fee for what we call intermediates, young people in their 20s. Pay $300 a year to become members, and we felt that they carry so much debt from their education and with their families getting started that they wouldn't be hunting if they paid the full membership fee. And it has really brought a lot of young, vibrant members to our club.
That
is something we'll continue to do.
That is a great, that is definitely the missing demographic in the hunting world, is that the sort of young adult demographic. You know, a lot of people have junior memberships and, you know, do what they can to bring pony clubbers and 4-H kids on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then there's the sort of big gap where people are, you know, finishing school and starting families and are, you know, financially a little more strapped. And then there's when they get to the sort of the their midlife, when they have a little more money and their kids are gone and they paid off their debt, and then they start mm-hmm. hunting again.
They come
so,
back, yeah.
Yep. They come back into the fold. So that's good. That's well, a great program.
$300 a year until they reach the age of 30.
That's great. Okay. Well, I think that's pretty much all we have time for right now. And we really appreciate you coming on the show and appreciate your efforts in Maryland and Delaware to preserve land for riding and hunting and wildlife and equestrian activities. And that's a great thing. And we wish more people would do it. And so we really appreciate that.
What a fascinating hunt. They interesting, because we get to hear from so many different hunts on this show. Wicomico is, I think, a beautiful balance of tradition and forward thinking.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that young adult membership and the conservation of that land is just so important.
So important. And land conservation is something that is very much at the forefront for a lot of millennials. That's very important because they recognize and have learned from a very early age that open spaces are extremely important to everybody. And I think that might be just another way that we can help encourage the younger demographic that's missing in every equestrian discipline. We lose them about senior high school and don't get them back till they're in their 40s. A really great way to encourage that demographic to participate in fox hunting, even if it's not necessarily riding horses and being a full member, but maybe they can do that type of young adult membership, or they can be somebody who's riding a bike, or somebody who is helping the whips by being on the four-wheeler and assisting the whips, keeping the hounds safe. So many ways to become involved with fox hunts. And it's great that the staff of the fox hunts are so happy to come on the podcast and talk about that, because they talk about it amongst themselves and amongst fox hunters, but what about the rest of us?
Yeah. And there's such an important link between land conservation and everything horses. I mean, no land, no horses. And
exactly.
And so I think it's, you know, when we were young, I mean, we used to ride out all over the place. And I think that's one of the things that people come back to fox hunting after having been kids and riding, and they come back to it because they like getting out of the arena.
Yes.
And they like being outdoors and seeing the landscape in a way that you never see it otherwise. And to me, that is what makes it such an important part of the overall equestrian tapestry, is, you know, is that fox hunting does this work. And so many fox hunts have these relationships with farmers and with landowners, and those people become convinced to save their land rather than to sell it to developers, because they see the value of it to this population, and they see how this population is going to preserve it and restore it. And the story that we have coming up about this this particular hunt talks about in detail how they went through this whole restoration process, and they got all these bird species back, like horned larks and sparrows and killdeer. And,
well, I'm going to have to read that one, doggone it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really, I mean, it's a lot more than just we preserve some land. It's we preserve some land, and then we did all this work on it to bring back the wildlife. And that is so, that is, to me, that's just a great, that's a great part of the whole overall picture.
Yeah, they really did preserve it. They didn't stop at let's keep it from being developed. Let's make sure that the ecosystem is healthy. That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. And they did it with the college too, which is really awesome because it gave those kids an opportunity to work on a project like this, which is like, that's going to have a huge impact on them later on.
Huge impact. And it's going to look really great on their CV.
Yep. Yeah, really great.
Well, fantastic. Cool stuff.
Great.
Great show today. I think it's time to wrap it up in a little red bow.
Sounds good to me.
Or maybe a green bow or a yellow bow. And if you don't know what all of those bows mean, tune in next month.
You can find Coverside online at ecoverside.net or check out the digital edition at issuu.com/ecoverside. Tara can be found at Instagram. Search for @TNTibbetts. Find the links to today's guests in the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning.
You can have all of the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go with our free app for iPhone and Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsors, Coverside Magazine. Good night.
Good night.